welcome back. Joining me now for a look at the day's market moves is Viv Govender from Rand Swiss Offshore and Willem Oldewager from Nitrogen Fund Managers. Thank you very much for your time, gentlemen. Of course, yesterday we did see risk-off sentiment filtering through. The JSC was in the red. We saw the top 40 yesterday closing lower by 1.35%. And today, the JSC is on a green ground. We are seeing a recovery. And I'd just like to know, what is responsible for this turnaround, for this sweetened mood in the markets? Willem, starting with you.
Sure. So I'm always thinking the JSC is sort of a proxy for China. So today, I think it's pretty much gold, resi, and process that's pulling us up. And then obviously, the JSC is short the rand, which is also helping. So I think today is really a story of resources and China tech.
Yeah, and I mean, just looking at China, we saw that Evergrande managed to pay off its coupon payment with a grace period that is ending tomorrow. So really getting their affairs in order, managing to pay off that payment a day earlier. And just, Viv, going to you, I mean, obviously the markets are cheering that at the moment, but I mean, they have another bond payment that is due next week on the 29th. I mean, how sure is the market that the Evergrande will be able to fulfill that commitment next week?
Look, I mean, I think the market right now still believes that the Chinese government is not going to let this company fail. It's just too large. You're talking hundreds of billions, you know, at stake. And even for an economy as large as China, hundreds of billions could cause a lot of systemic issues. So the idea right now is that the market is, I think, to a certain extent, hoping that the Chinese government is able to, you know, calm things down and so on. But what I would phrase it like this. Imagine just you're walking around one day, just your leg breaks out of nowhere for no reason. It's the kind of situation you have with Evergrande. It's not a broken leg that's the problem. There's some systematic issue behind the scenes that's the issue. And the same thing with Evergrande. The fact of the matter that we have such a huge, you know, failure happening here indicates there's some systemic issues in the Chinese economy that are going to cause these things to occur in the future. So even if you get past the Evergrande issue, I do think there's going to be other issues down the line. And I'm not sure if the Chinese government will be able to take care of those future issues as well as able to take care of the Evergrande issue right now.
Yeah, and just, Viv, sticking to that issue, I mean, also, how concerned are we in terms of house prices in China, considering that this crisis, this Evergrande crisis, is still ongoing? And of course, it's filtering on to the rest of the property sector.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Chinese population is growing old very quickly. In fact, if you looked at China in the last, you know, say, a couple of decades, they went up like almost 10 years in terms of age versus the Americans. So they've got it from being quite young a few decades ago to being basically as old as the Americans, you know, or close to it anyway, right now. And they're going to be aging past that. And because of the reason, one of the main reasons is that whole one China policy, or one child policy in China, where you have one child for every two parents. Or just about, you know, applies to about half the population. What you're going to have is a declining population. You're going to have an older population. You're going to have a decreased demand for, you know, housing, et cetera, going into the future. And if you keep developing things as if you had a growing population, you're going to have some serious issues. So I do think that the Chinese property market is probably, you know, going to have a really tough period going into the future. Just look at the craziness we saw, for instance, in the Japanese property market at the end of the 80s, early 90s, and, you know, what's happened since then. It's not going to be a roaring market, I think, into the future.
Yeah. Just talking about prices, of course, we have this inflation that seems to be stickier than initially anticipated. And Willem, just coming to you, we had U.S. jobless, weekly jobless claims coming in lower than expected, of course, signaling some good moves for the labor market in the U.S. And of course, with that, we have inflation lasting longer than anticipated. And of course, we know that the Fed says that, you know, in order to normalize monetary policy, they're targeting two things, inflation and, of course, the labor market. So just looking at those factors right now, I'm just wondering, you know, obviously with inflation lasting longer and the labor market improving, it seems that we are nearing those targets of that the Fed is trying to reach in terms of normalizing monetary policy. But I'm just interested if the Fed, in terms of inflation, they have a handle on what's happening, because as much as inflation is stickier than initially thought, to me it still seems like it's largely a supply chain issue, a supply shortage issue, more than demand-driven inflation. So do they actually really know and have a handle on what's happening with inflation to justify maybe normalizing monetary policy quite soon?
Yes, so That's quite a good question. I mean, the Fed over the last, I guess, 15, 20 years have actually done a decent job excluding the 2008 global financial crisis. So I think they really understand what they're doing. They're very educated and they understand their mandate and their policy. And I do think they have a handle on it. But I think right now, maybe the combination of a shortage in chips and a shortage in ships have sort of confused or surprised both the Fed and market participants. And then specifically, I mean, the jobless claim is coming down. I mean, people are prepared to give up their stimulus checks and look for jobs again, which is very positive from an economic standpoint. But it also might seem that the Fed, not overstimulated, but tapering is definitely on the horizon. And then just looking today, I mean, gold's doing incredibly well. And I think that's just people fearing consumer prices rising, you know, energy costs rising. And like I said, chips and ships. So I think they have a handle on it, but I don't think you should think, you know, these low rates and continuous stimulus is going to be there forever.
And Willem, just with these supply chain shortages, I mean, we do know that at some point they will start cooling down. And I'm just interested, this kind of demand that we are seeing, when that starts unwinding the supply chain issues, do you think we'll still see the same demand momentum?
Yeah, so look, I do think demand is probably going to take a bit of a boost up. I think to a certain extent, we are seeing, for instance, the U.S. wages rising. We are seeing, you know, some of the bigger, you know, corporations out there offering significantly higher wages than they were before, just because people now have had the stimulus check, they need more incentive to go back to work. And that's one of the issues we've seen in the U.S., a little drop in the labor force participation rate. We've also seen, for instance, regulatory changes in the fracking situation in the U.S. So where the U.S. a couple of years ago was one of the It was the biggest, basically, producer of oil in the world. Right now, it's dropped down quite significantly. Companies are looking more to return dividends to shareholders as opposed to, you know, expanding production when prices go up because of the regulatory issues they face in the U.S. right now. And without the U.S. Control on oil, we could be seeing oil prices rise significantly higher than we've seen for the last couple of years. And longer term, I do think we have to worry about inflation for a simple reason. China used to be the factory of the world. Now it's going to be the world's, one of the world's biggest consumers as the elderly continue consuming while the young basically disappear and no longer produce as much. And so that's going to be another long-term factor. I think that's going to be affecting long-term inflation. How much, I don't know, but I think that'll be a different change we'll see.
And just, you know, just on that oil situation, of course, we are seeing rising prices and a shortage of supply is being cited here. But, you know, I'm just wondering because I seem to be getting different explanations as to these supply shortages. So is this an actual oil shortage, oil supply shortage, where there's been lack of investment in the recent while? Or is it a case of artificial shortage where OPEC is trying to control those prices, Willem?
Yes, OPEC are missing their own targets, so I don't think it's artificial. I think I'm not sure which part of OPEC or who in the agreement is sort of not delivering up to their standard, but I think there are real shortages and it's coming from the demand side. The energy need in Europe is increasing and the wind farms aren't doing what they were projected to do. So I think more oil and gas is needed. And I think the fact that OPEC can't meet their own targets is just exacerbating an already pretty terrible situation.
Yeah. Viv, the US and Europe have been largely focused on company earnings for the past 2 weeks. We've seen some really great numbers coming out of these companies, really signaling a good demand amid the stickier inflation and supply chain issues. And I mean, but you have these great earnings coming out and signaling good demand, but then you have economic data saying a different story. For example, in the UK, consumer confidence for October is at its lowest level since February, and in the Eurozone, the October PMI reading is at a six-month low. How do you reconcile these figures?
Well, I mean, part of the reason that we've seen such great demand from companies, etc., out there is that there's more money in the system. I mean, if you look at, you know, overall government debt, you know, especially in the developed world, like the U.S., for instance, it's just skyrocketed in the last year or so. I mean, governments are spending insane amounts of money. You know, what used to be, like, if you just compare, for instance, the TARP program to what one of these rounds of stimulus it looks like. I mean, the entire TARP program is nothing compared to one of these latest rounds of stimulus, and that's only a decade and a bit ago. So there's a lot of money in the system. People have been getting these direct paychecks coming through. We have, for instance, a lot of things like, you know, effective subsidies out there, like student loans. like the towards the eviction moratorium, which meant you could basically not pay your rental for a year and a half and still not be evicted. So, I mean, it was free housing effective for a lot of people out there. And those kind of things, I think, obviously have affected demand because people have more money. But the economy overall is in trouble. You can't be basically juicing the system to such a great extent with this much, you know, external stimulus. We have incredibly low interest rates. So at some point in time, we have to basically cut down on spending. We have to basically have an increase in interest rates. And I think that's going to be what people are seeing. And to a certain extent as well, we are seeing, you know, the effects of the shipping issue. Like Willem mentioned, you know, apparently in the UK, for instance, about 2/3 of people have already done a lot of their food shopping for Christmas because they're so fearful about not having, you know, their Christmas treats on time. We are seeing people obviously missing their goods when it comes to Christmas. And I think that also has a negative sentiment effect in the economy.
Yeah. Now, Willem, Netcare coming out with a trading statement today saying that they expect core profit to rise as much as 26%. And I mean, last week we had an update as well from Mediclinic, really seeming like the hospital space is managing the COVID-19 pandemic better. But, you know, last week when Mediclinic came out with its trading update, it was on the leaderboard on the winners of the JSE. And you see Netcare coming out with its trading update and the hospital stocks are actually in the red. I mean, it seems to be a Netcare problem in this case, I would guess. What did Netcare miss?
So Netcare's revenue growth was very good, but off an incredibly low base. And I think their margins, unfortunately, are still lagging the rest of the hospital space. So I think it was a good update, but Netcare is, wow, it's fractions of what it used to be. I mean, a 20th in terms of what it could be. So I think Netcare is a good company, but you have to look 2, 3, 4 years out. Because if you look at maybe a fourth wave coming, their inpatient days and their elective surgeries will probably be lower than the market would have expected. And they sort of guided towards, you know, that might be a possibility, which is fair. Mm. So I think their margins were blocked behind the rest. And it's a very long-term story.
Yeah, and sticking to the healthcare space, Viv Aspen announcing the sale of its 6 drug products to a Swiss company, Sino, getting 1.8 billion rand for that deal, saying that it's going to reduce debt. Does this latest move to streamline its portfolio and pay down its debt, whet your appetite for Aspen? Viv?
Look, I think Aspen's been a company that's had a lot of issues, you know, over the last couple of years in terms of just the share price coming down quite significantly. I like the fundamental business. I do think it makes sense. We are seeing pharmaceuticals going forward. I don't know if the profits are going to be made on the Aspen side of the business or more towards those guys doing R&D at the moment, because I think that's a very attractive area. One thing that was shown by the coronavirus crisis is the fact that, you know, basically, biological innovation has taken a quantum leap forward. Things that you won't think impossible is like, you know, available right now. And, you know, for instance, even the stuff that was taken for the vaccine could be used for things like cancer. So I think that's a lot of stuff there. So I'd be more focusing on the research part of the pharmacare business as opposed to on the generic stuff. But I do think Aspen does have a good fundamental business.
All right. Now, moving on to your stock picks. Willem, what are you choosing as your stock pick for today?
My stock pick is going to be African Rainbow Minerals. For those, if you don't know, it's iron ore and platinum, mainly more because of the platinum and the sort of soft rand. It's really lagged the other platinum players. And if you feel you sort of miss the rally, it's a great entry price. So you're going to get your dividend. I mean, it's a lot of upside from you.
Viv, what are you going for today?
I'm sticking with resources. I think if we do have the stimulus coming through, especially in the infrastructure space, we are going to see an uptick in demand for resources. That's going to basically create I don't know if it's going to be a super cycle, but at least an uptick in this current cycle.
Right. That was Viv Govender from Rand Swiss Offshore and Willem Oldewacher from Nitrogen Fund Managers.